5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Warning, you're about to experience an unpleasant truth.
America must choose to build a future or obsess about the past, to be a nation of fear, division, and of darkness.
Use your aggressive feeling.
Embrace anger, chaos, and truth, but in the shadow of lies.
Let the hate flow through you.
Together we can choose a different path.
Join me, and together we can rule the galaxy.
Our nation of fear, division, and of darkness.
Break me down with all of your hatred, and your journey towards the dark side will be complete.
Embrace anger. Thrive on chaos. But in the shadow of lies.
So this is how liberty dies. With thunderous applause.
Across the fruited plain and from sea to shining sea. 3 hours of bold truth, excellence, and optimism for America. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Welcome back. Hour number 3 of the Wendy Bell Radio Program. Did you know that right now you could help us march our way to 2.5 million podcast downloads? I'm talking about 2.5 million people out there who've taken the time to go into the App Store or go into the podcast area and download Wendy Bell Radio onto their devices and to listen to us, because we've had more than 2 million people do that. And if you're part of that, thank you. We so appreciate you and your help. And we love being part of your family. There are some no-go zones, I think, for lack of a better word for it. There are some no-go zones where we should not have to have conversations. The flag, the firefighters with the thin red line on the flag to remember the fallen. People who run into buildings and businesses and put everything on the line. I mean, that's crazy. You have to be a certain kind of crazy to realize that every single day you can die because fire is unpredictable, and no matter your training, anything could happen. We ought not have conversations that a flag to commemorate that, to pay tribute to that. That anybody should be able to suggest such a flag is political or fascist. Idiotic. Same way, we should protect our veterans. I mean, I don't know how much more we can say this. Because like our police, we are... there aren't a lot of young men and women who are really dying to get out there and to put themselves in danger for an administration that clearly doesn't value them. And so we have this military idea of strength, but it's box checking and it's now weak. And we have a very weak military. Weak, vaccinated, and suffering military. Can we at least agree that the veterans be left alone? That if you serve your country in any capacity like that, that the people of this country can take care of you, that we can give you quality health care, that we can give you safety and warmth and a home, and that it can't be taken from you? Because it is. Boston says it is overrun by illegal immigrants, plans to place them in veterans' housing. that somebody even had to write that, or even this is the disconnect I have. Like, who in Joe Biden or Barack Obama or Bill Clinton's orbit, was there not one single person on Thursday before they raised $25 million to perpetuate their suck? Was there nobody who was like, are you guys paying attention to the news? Because 37 miles away, a dead police officer is being memorialized, and this glee and gloating and celebration and beating of the chest is really a tragic look. We ought not do that. Did anybody with any brain power at all in any place in California where they're a sanctuary state, not just for migrants, for heaven's sakes, but for transgender people, anybody who checks a victim box, because that's the thing. We can't have you be productive members of society. We need you to make everybody miserable and to stick us with the tab. So go on and go do it. Boston, sanctuary. Massachusetts in general, falling over themselves. Oh, it's not their fault that they're fleeing persecution. They're not. Because I've got an accompanying story here about a migrant influencer who's been mocking U.S. taxpayers who work like slaves so that he doesn't have to. You think that they're not onto it. So Governor Maura Healey, who's terrible, says, we've said for months now that our system is at capacity. Hey, Maura, whose fault is that? Oh, that's right. That's yours when you were like, we're a sanctuary state. Come on in, everybody. Right? And so now they're taking veterans' homes, veteran housing, and saying, beat it. Beat it, veteran guy. Beat it. We've got more important things here to do. Boston's preparing to house illegal migrants in former veterans' housing as the city's resources have been exhausted since Democratic Governor Maura Healey declared a state of emergency over the surge last summer. The veterans' home at Chelsea will become a, quote, safety net site. Safety net site. For migrants, where beginning May 1st, a month from today, they'll have to prove they're working to wean off government assistance by applying for work authorizations, learning English, and searching for permanent residency. Well, we should totally make sure that they have an ID so they can vote. We've said for months now that our system is at capacity, and we don't have the space, providers, or funding to continue expanding, says an emergency assistance director, blah, blah, blah. This new certification policy is a responsible step to address the capacity restraints at our safety net sites. Families will need to demonstrate that they've taken action to get on a path toward independence and out of a shelter. Do you guys really think that's what's going to happen? Do you really think that all of a sudden we're going to have these parameters and people are going to be like, we really want to make sure that you're a good fit for us. So why don't you show us where you're working and we'll see if you can, you know, X, Y, or Z. Bullcrap. It's not even close to what's going on. Why? Well, freeloading migrant influencer mocks U.S. taxpayers who, quote, work like slaves while waving cash in latest videos. Have you guys seen Leo Moreno, who turns to Instagram after apparently being banned on TikTok? Fantastic. This guy Moreno, the illegal immigrant migrant influencer who's urged his followers to use squatter laws to take over vacant American homes. I'm not even talking about vacant homes that are like boarded up in the bad neighborhoods. Like, yeah, this isn't a good place. No, these are places where people go on vacation and they're gone for a week or two. And then they come home and there's a family or all sorts of people living in their house. What? What is going on? In a series of five short clips, Moreno flaunted a stack of cash. Stack is an understatement. I'm going to go with there's probably $10,000 and $100 bills in his hand. He bragged about not having to work, also mocked fellow migrants who come to the U.S. to work cleaning or construction and landscaping jobs. I didn't cross the Rio Grande to work like a slave, he says in Spanish, according to a translation of his videos. I came to the U.S. to mark my territory. It, you know, the Bill Maher 4 years effect later, where he's like, you know, it's been 4 years since COVID started. We've learned a lot. Really? Why is it that we knew and we talked about it and we asked questions? We're like, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Fired. Fired. And now all of a sudden, these people who we were told are fleeing persecution, they're just coming here for a better life. And you're so hateful. You won't let them come. Open up your house, right? We're like, come on, man. People who are coming for asylum aren't marching across the border carrying their home country's flags. We saw that in 2019. Does it need to take 4 or 5 years for everybody to get on the same freaking page and realize that everybody has been played? Well, not everybody. Some of us have just been telling the truth. They don't want you to know the truth. Have you guys heard about the feds? Have you seen the feds rolling up at people's homes, clicking on their doorbell and saying, yeah, we got to talk to you. What do you want to talk about? Did I do something wrong? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're here to trample on your First Amendment. You think it's not going? You think it's not happening? Well, we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But the whole idea of owning nothing and liking it, this whole communist, socialist vision of America, I've got a great example for you. It's already here, friends. I'll prove it next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. All right, so before I move on, I want to talk about this TikTok influencer guy waving at least 10 grand in $100 bills, who claims to have enough money to go at least a year and a half without working, at times singing and waving cash around with a baby in his lap. He also mocked people who work for a living, including fellow migrants who came to the U.S. to find jobs. You're hurt because I make more than you without much work while you work like slaves. Understand, he says. That's the difference between you and me. I'm going to go make lots of money without much work, and you're going to be exploited and miserable and insignificant. He says, I didn't cross 12 countries to be a slave to anyone. I came to the USA to become a millionaire. So this guy, illegal immigrant in our country, his TikTok account, which had more than 500,000 followers, appeared to have been removed as of Wednesday. In prior videos, he claimed that his family received $350 a week in government handouts since entering the U.S. illegally and has been raking in up to $1,000 a week on the video platform. Well, isn't that what capitalism is all about? Ew. So I got this on Discern Report. Brock found this, and this is very sobering. The whole idea of you will own nothing and you will like it, which is what this socialist, communist, Marxist, everything suck believes from the middle out and the bottom up, or whatever the hell that is. I have no idea what that even is, but I do know what this headline means. Renting is now cheaper than owning a house in America's 50 biggest metro areas. Not only are we destroying Generation Z, which with something you're going to hear about in the next segment, truly dizzying review of how a singular invention has led to the demise and the social instability, the emotional instability of so many people in this Generation Z. We've stolen the American dream from a generation of young people. A recent Realtor.com report found that renting has emerged as more cost-effective than buying homes across all 50 metro areas in the United States as home prices soar and mortgage rates escalate. Realtor.com, a company owned by News Corp subsidiary Move Incorporated, determines the monthly expense of home ownership by aggregating the median listing prices of studio, one-bedroom, and two-bedroom residences in a given market, with weighting based on listing volumes. This calculation assumes an 8% down payment on the home and a mortgage rate of 6.78%, including taxes, insurance, and homeowner association fees. Based on the method used, the rent to buy disparity is most pronounced in the Austin, Round Rock, Georgetown metro areas in Texas, where the median rent registers at $1,530, substantially lower than the $3,698 monthly outlay for home ownership in February. In other words, buying a home in this metro is 142% more expensive than renting. Seattle, Tacoma, Bellevue, and Phoenix, Mesa, Chandler, the metro areas there follow suit, where rent is $2,422, $1,528 more economical per month than purchasing a home. But wait. You're like, wow, that's super expensive. Thank goodness I don't live there. Whew. Imagine living in the New York, Newark, Jersey City metro area, where the median rent, where it's super safe and fabulous, everybody loves being there, it's great, where the median rent is $2,852 a month. How do you live there? Well, you got to rent because you ain't buying. You want to know what your monthly mortgage is, Brock? You ready?
$4,500.
$49.95. $5,000 a month.
That's like a $1 million home.
For a more, it's not even. In turn, the February monthly rent report at Realtor.com reveals that renting is far more convenient than buying a house. You'll own nothing and you will like it. Now, it sounds so weird and out there, doesn't it? You're like, come on. That's not what it's all about. That's not what the middle out and the bottom up is. Yes, it is. It's taking away from you and not even giving to the poor. It's taking from you and giving to the government so they can stay in charge, in control, in power indefinitely. Oh, I cannot wait for everybody's tax bills. 2 weeks. 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, from today. I know, right? And that ain't April Fool's. All right, when we come back, this is a very important conversation we have to have. I'm totally biased because I have five kids, all of whom in Generation Z. But there's a guy out there who says the decay of this generation started with one pivotal event. I got it for you next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. I'll give you a little inside baseball here. So I have two cameras on me right now. One is Newsmax, and two, we're on the N2 channel there. The other is our camera for our video screen or stream. And I'm going to put up my hand right now because as I leaned in and was singing to you guys during the rejoin, the camera started going haywire. It is my effect on technology. That's what I'm going to go with. Anyway, Brock, it might move, and I'm sorry if it does. It is what it is. So I found something very fascinating over the weekend, and I wasn't expecting to stumble upon this, but it was a PBS interview, not a big PBS watcher, whatever. And it was a sit-down interview with this fellow who is a really well-known social psychologist, totally not aware of who this guy was. But I started listening to this interview, and it was captivating. It's like this guy had the ability to slice through what I was feeling in the moment. and go back to something that I had said many, many years ago and kind of confirm that that was his hypothesis too. But he brought the details and the goods. And I want to share this with you, particularly if you are, whether you're like I am, and you have children who fall into this Generation Z category, or you are older and you're looking at the youth today and you feel despondent as though the whole country is going to hell in a handbasket. I encourage you not to feel that way because I have great hope. But this story is really interesting, and I was kind of intrigued because the Daily Wire picked up on this interview with PBS and they put out an article on it. Now, I could have cut up the guy's audio and had him explain it, but I think it'll be more effective for me to read to you what he said. So here's the headline from the Daily Wire. Top psychologists blame smartphones and social media for the decay of Generation Z and the rise of transgenderism. Now, that's a pretty big statement, and I would concur with zero scientific basis, just because I live at 30,000 feet. And I know how long I had to hold out to get my kids' phones. But this guy talks about this very interesting time in calendar, specific year, when the flip phone turned to the iPhone, and the subset of particularly young girls who got really jammed up because of it. So here's your story. His name is Jonathan Haidt. He's a social psychologist at NYU Stern. He said in an interview this week that smartphones and social media have led to numerous problems for Generation Z. And it's absolutely correct. I'm Generation X. My kids are Generation Z. I was obviously a grown-up. I was in my 30s before I got a cell phone. I was closer to 40 before I got a smartphone. I still don't have any idea all of the things that are on my phone. I don't care to know. And it's almost like I'm kind of like old, right? I do other stuff than sit on my phone all day. Kids, totally different story. Jonathan Haidt, the social psychologist, made these remarks while speaking to Firing Line with host Margaret Hoover about his new book. It's entitled The Anxious Generation: How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. I agree with this. He explained that this great rewiring refers to a 5-year period. And I want you to think critically about this. Think about your own kids or grandkids. It's between 2010 and 2015 when society fundamentally changed for adolescents with the emergence of smartphones and social media. And this is what he said. In 2010, adolescents had flip phones. They had most did not have high-speed internet, he said. Over the next 5 years, though, by 2015, most American teens have a smartphone with a front-facing camera, high-speed internet. They have an Instagram account or other social media accounts, Snapchat, a bunch of other ones. And now in 2015, it's possible to spend every waking hour online, and many do. And so my argument in the book is that all of a sudden, boom, in the blink of an eye, childhood became about sitting down and looking at a screen hour after hour, year after year. And that, I believe, he says, is the major reason why rates of mental illness go skyrocketing around 2012, 2013. Now, this is really interesting to me. I concur that these cell phones and the high-speed internet and all of the apps and all of the options, the things that you can do there, it's a personal computer in the palm of your hand, completely changed our children. My kids are scattered right around this time period where they were too young to have the advanced technology or too young at all to have any technology at all. What he says, though, about the girls is fascinating. He said that the very concept of social media, posting things that make you stand out because you're desperately fighting for attention, has been detrimental to adolescents because they're learning these behaviors during puberty. Quote, so the millennials were basically through puberty by the time this great rewiring happened. And that's why they're okay, I believe, he said. The definition of Gen Z, I would say, is that they went through puberty on super viral social media or a smartphone in their pocket that was giving them notifications and calling them away from whatever they were doing, calling them away from people, calling them away from their friends. You can see them sitting in a lunchroom next to each other, each on their phone. This is not the way a human being can grow up. And that all happened in this super sweet slice of the calendar, 2010 to 2015. He said that young people's brains are very vulnerable during this time period. It's the time when adolescents are supposed to be shaped by the adults in their lives into knowing how to act and how to make the transition into becoming an adult. Well, we don't do that, he says. Instead, what we do is we hand you this device. So this is about the worst thing you can imagine to give to kids at the beginning of puberty. And this great rewiring radically altered the inputs to children, taking away what most of what they used to do, most of their older inputs, including other people, and swapping in screens. It's so true, isn't it? He said that another mistake that parents have made is being overly protective of their children in the real world while not setting boundaries and watching them in the digital world. 100% correct. How many of you guys have gone to the grocery store and you see a toddler sitting in the front of the buggy, right? And the parent takes the time to get one of those quilted covers to put around the surface so there's no germs and no bacteria or whatever, and then hands over their cell phone so the kid stares at a screen the whole time. There's no looking around. There's no being aware of your surroundings. There's not being actively involved with mom or dad and seeing how things work. We've effectively taken away from an entire generation of children the idea of observing and making up their own mind and figuring out where they fit in this continuum. Instead, it's based on this phony, baloney social media nonsense, which is not the real world. And he says, for human children, the best kind of play is a group, like mixed-aged group, out in the neighborhood. They made their own rules. They made their own games. They enforced their own rules. That's how you basically mature for a democratic society. But beginning in the 1980s, we began to get very afraid. We began to get the milk cartons with the missing child. Even though true abduction is very rare, Americans got scared. They began to clamp down on free play and childhood independence. And then they think that being good parents, by always keeping them supervised, it's the safest thing to do. So we make them come inside and basically become house cats. And then we give them a device to take the role of learning and doing it on their own. This is where the whole transgender thing comes into play, which is wild. It took me longer to figure out what happened for boys, he said. It's a very interesting, very sad story. He says, boys, it turns out, have been withdrawing from the real world since the 70s and the 80s. Boys are less likely to graduate from high school. They're less likely to go to college. They're less likely to get master's degrees, PhDs, become doctors and lawyers. Boys are dropping out of society. And a big part of that, we believe, is that the virtual world has gotten so enticing. Boys, adolescent boys, care a lot about sex. They're really motivated to get it, which is a very hard thing to do. You have to learn all kinds of skills, and it's very scarce to get sex. But if you go online, vivid pornography is available to you. And boys love adventure. They love teamwork. They love sports. They love competing. It's hard to make a team. There's all kinds of challenges there. Just turn on your Xbox and you've got a team versus team situation. So we made life easier and easier for the boys. But it's the girls. Their loss of in-person time is the biggest single thing, the constant social comparison. So if you have an 11 or a 12-year-old girl on Instagram several hours a day, on TikTok several hours a day, Most of what she sees is happy girls living beautiful lives. Is this going to be good for her? Hell no. The explosion of transgenderism is a social contagion caused by social media and smartphones. And the takeaway was, you give this victim status to anyone who's just struggling through the basic walk of puberty, which sucks, no matter where you come from. And the connection, particularly in the young girls going through these transitions because they think it's going to give them what they're missing right now, when what they're missing right now involves turning off the phone and going outside the way we used to. Have we destroyed a generation of Americans? Quick time out. When we come back on the Wendy Bell Radio program, it's the video of the day. It's a BBC schmuck trying to school a world leader about climate change, and he gets his rear end handed to him. Fantastic. It's worth the wait. Next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. So I found this on NDTV, whatever that means. What gives you the right to lecture us? So the president of Guyana schools this super smug, white, erudite appearing schmuck BBC reporter. He's brilliant. I'm going to give you the backstory, okay? So this is President Irfan Ali. He's speaking in an interview to BBC journalist Stephen Sacker, who had questioned the president on Guyana's carbon emission rates as it planned to extract oil and gas along its coast. Can these people who've been drinking too much of the Kool-Aid just suck it for a minute? There is no consensus about carbon anything. Oh, your carbon footprint. We're going to reduce our carbon footprint by blah, 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 blah. They're all completely unprovable, intangible, irrelevant, big words and numbers that make you think, oh, I'm going to have to get some of that. Even though it means nothing. So they're sitting down. Here's the president of Guyana. He's an all-out attack on Western hypocrisy on carbon emissions has gone viral. All the guy did was tell the truth. President Irfan Ali, speaking in an interview to BBC journalist Stephen Sacker, who had questioned the president on Guyana's carbon emission rates as it planned to extract oil and gas along its coast. In a viral interview clip, Guyanese president can be seen interrupting the question of the journalist and then cross-questioning him on whether he had the, quote, right to lecture him on climate change, and if he was in the, quote, pockets of those who destroy the environment through the Industrial Revolution and are now lecturing us. Let me just quickly, I'm just going to rub my cheeks a little bit because it makes me smile to see suckers get put in their place and for spades to be called what they are. All right, here we go. Here is the interview, the BBC sucking serious wind. Go.
Let's take a big picture look at what's going on here. Over the next decade, two decades, it is expected that there will be $150 billion worth of oil and gas extracted off your coast. It's an extraordinary figure. But think of it in practical terms. That means, according to many experts, more than 2 billion tons of carbon emissions will come from your seabed, from those reserves, and be released into the atmosphere. I don't know if you, as a head of state, went to the COP in Dubai.
Let me stop you right there.
Yes.
Do you know that Guyana has a forest forever that is the size of England and Scotland combined? A forest that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon? A forest that we have kept alive? A forest that we have kept alive.
Does that give you the right? Does that give you the right to release all of this carbon?
Does that give you the right to lecture us on climate change. I am going to lecture you on climate change. Ooh. Because we have kept this forest alive that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon that you enjoy, that the world enjoy, that you don't pay us for, that you don't value, that you don't see a value in, that the people of Guyana has kept alive. Guess what? We have the lowest deforestation rate in the world. And guess what? Even with our greatest exploration of the oil and gas resource we have now, we will still be net zero. Guyana will still be net zero. With all our exploration, still be net zero.
Powerful words, Mr. President.
I'm not completed as yet. I am not finished as yet. I am just not finished as yet. Because this is the hypocrisy that exists in the world. The world in the last 50 years has lost 65% of all its biodiversity. We have kept our biodiversity. Are you valuing it? Are you ready to pay for it? When is the developed world going to pay for it? Or are you in the pockets? Are you in the pockets of those who have damaged the environment? Are you in the pockets? Are you and your system in the pockets of those who destroyed the environment through the Industrial Revolution and now lecturing us? Are you in their pockets? Are you paid by them? Are you
He's like, no, where's my white flag? I surrender. His face is melting off. That is exactly what needs to happen. That's the most basic and brutal form of pushback. Don't sit here and tell me about stuff that you don't know anything about. You're a product of talking points that suck, that are not even remotely consensus scientific. And everybody knows your talking points suck. Sir, you're going to release 2 billion tons of carbon emissions from the seabed, release into the environment. And he says, oh yeah? How do you like me now? The pushback is fantastic. Don't you wish it happened faster and more commonly? But it is. There are people out there who are waking up, ladies and gentlemen. It has taken longer than we wish. But it is undeniable. It is happening because of things like 37 miles. When you see something that's a no-brainer, a police officer shot and killed in the line of duty, who should not have been, by a career thug criminal who had already been picked up on something like 21 crimes. You don't go party into the night and then brag about it if you expect the people of these United States to believe that you care. But you know they don't. The same way the president of Guyana knows that that BBC hack is nothing but a preaching, lecturing schmuck. You deserve that. You're welcome. Hey, if you want more, I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. I hope you will join us and bring a friend. Until then, peace.